It's time for Fed Talk, the live show for feds in the know. From federal agencies to Capitol Hill, the attorneys of Shaw, Bransford, and Roth bring in experts from across the federal community to bring you inside the issues. Fed Talk is meant to provide general information about legal issues. However, the views expressed in this program are not intended to provide legal counseling. Listeners are cautioned not to rely upon any statements made in resolving legal issues they may face, but instead to consult with their own attorney about specific situations. Attorneys are not engaged in providing legal services while appearing on the program and are not responsible in any manner for the consequences that may stem directly or indirectly from reliance on any statement made during this program.
Good morning. Welcome to Fed Talk. I'm Bill Bransford, and we're not really going to be discussing very many legal issues this morning. We are going to be discussing Police Week, which is coming up next week. We're going to be discussing law enforcement. We're going to be discussing the National Law Enforcement Officers Memorial Fund and its museum, which is under construction. We're going to be talking about what is a very substantial part and growing part of the federal workforce. And to help us do that, I'd like to welcome Herb Giobbe, the Chief Operating Officer of the National Law Enforcement Officers Memorial Fund. Herb, welcome to Fed Talk.
Bill, thanks so much for having us.
And a regular on Fed Talk, John Adler. John is the President of the Federal Law Enforcement Officers Association, and he's also a board member of the National Law Enforcement Officers Memorial Fund. John, welcome to Fed Talk.
Thanks, Bill. Great to be here. As always.
And John, you work in New York, I believe?
Yes, I do.
And he's down here for some of the Police Week festivities next week, and it's a big time, Herb, next week. That's what you get ready for all year, isn't it?
It really is, Bill. We have a staff that works on this for a substantial portion of the year. It's grown immensely. Our CEO and founder, Craig Floyd, was talking just the other day about 20 years ago, 20 plus years ago, started in a little ceremony in Senate Park. In fact, the survivors weren't even a part of that ceremony. It's grown substantially to where there's now about 20 different activities. Literally on May 13th at our candlelight vigil, we'll expect anywhere from 20 to 25,000 people just at that vigil. It's a way, a very appropriate way to honor the service and sacrifice of our law enforcement officers.
Okay, I would just like to remind our listeners that Fed Talk is brought to you by GEICO, where 15 minutes could save you 15% on car insurance. For more information on GEICO, go to geico.com. And if you'd like to join our discussion today, if you'd like to talk to Herb or John, give us a call, 1-877-936-9333. If you have a question or a comment about Police Week, it is a big deal. Parts of the week kind of take over the city. And if you if you're sitting by your computer, you just like to email us and make an observation, you can email us at fedtalk@federalnewsradio.com. Tell us a little bit about how the Police Week is going to get started, Herb.
Police Week is actually the week that May 15th falls in, and that's by federal legislation. However, we actually start way ahead of that week. We will actually start with ceremonies this Saturday, and we'll do some a ceremony honoring the corrections officers. We'll have our version of what we call Law Ride, if you will. It's the same as the Vietnam version of Rolling Thunder. On Sunday, we'll have several thousand officers on motorcycles coming in and arriving at the memorial and doing a ceremony.
And they come in from all over the country.
They come in from all over the country. As with Rolling Thunder, it's quite a sight to see all these motorcycles come in. And this year, they have added antique cars and things like that. So it's quite a sight to see. On Monday, we'll actually have a ceremony. Actually, it's the MPD, the DC officers will have their ceremony in front of their police headquarters. And then on May 12th, actually a very, very moving ceremony and a great story behind this. The Police Unity Tour arrives. They're officers on bicycles. Bill, there's a great story behind that. And by the way, this is all before we get to the major activities of Police Week.
And these, some of these things, as they're going on, they're all in the Washington area?
They're all in the Washington
and
area.
And where, if somebody wants to go watch this or participate, where would they go?
Everything will be centered around the memorial. And the memorial is located in Judiciary Square, an historic part of D.C. That's between E and F and between 4th and 5th. So
right there's also a metro station.
Literally the metro station. Interesting architectural feat. The memorial was actually built on top of the metro station. So if you come out the Judiciary Square metro station on the Red Line, you literally are in the memorial. So it's that close.
And I noticed yesterday, I happened to be on the metro going through that station, and there are signs up about Police Week and about what you all do with the National Law Enforcement Officers.
There's signs for Police Week, and for those who are traveling downtown by metro, there are signs directing you right to the memorial as you come out of the metro station. But I was talking about the Police Unity Tour. It's a great story about that, Bill. This year, we will have probably close to 12 to 1,300 bicycle riders that come from all over the country to honor fallen law enforcement officers. In fact, their motto is, "We ride for those who died." It started about 13 years ago with about 17 officers riding from northern New Jersey. It's grown, obviously, immensely, and this year they'll come in with about 1,300 officers all in their Police Unity Tour uniforms, and it's quite a sight to see. It's just this massive bicyclists coming in. They all congregate. They come in from different spokes around the country, and then they all congregate at RFK and ride past the Capitol into the memorial. It's a very moving ceremony.
And people who are paying attention next week would probably see some of this on the evening news.
Yes, we certainly hope so.
You do get your degree of publicity.
We certainly hope so. But again, that truly leads up to at least the Memorial Fund's major event, and that is on Friday night, May 13th. That is the Candlelight Vigil, where we will be dedicating the names of the officers who have died, both in this past year and officers who we've discovered through our research department who have died in previous years. We'll be dedicated the names of 316 officers this year, 152 who died in 2010 from the federal, state, and local law enforcement agencies, and another 164 that we've discovered through our research. As I mentioned earlier in the program, we expect probably close to 22, 23,000 people. It's done in the evening. It starts at 8 o'clock. It's a candlelight vigil, and you can't imagine how moving it is with 22 to 23,000 people holding their candles up as it gets dark. Traditionally, and again this year, the Attorney General will be the keynote speaker. Secretary Janet Napolitano will also be speaking. Of course, we have wonderful music and things like that. And it's quite a moving ceremony, and probably, at least in our minds, the pinnacle of Police Week.
And that is at the memorial.
It's right at the memorial.
So anybody who's interested, just go down there and...
Exactly. And the public is welcome.
Get a candle and join the vigil.
We of course, supply all of the candles and things like that, so we would welcome everyone. For those of your listeners, by the way, it starts at 8 o'clock, but for those of your listeners who may not be from this area but would like to or need to stay home, we actually have it's streamed over the web, and if they just go to our website, which is lawenforcementmemorial.org, they can actually see a streaming video of the candlelight vigil.
Lawenforcementmemorial.org.
Yes. Yeah.
So anybody from another part of the country can watch it.
Exactly. So...
Okay. So what else happens during Police Week?
Following the 13th, and there are all sorts of things like we have honor guard competitions, there's pipe band demonstrations, there's a really moving and fun ceremony called the Emerald Society Pipe Band March and Service. And that is on the 14th. Again, all of this at the memorial, where we have pipe bands mainly from the whole northeastern part of the country, and they come in and they play together. It's truly a fun activity. Another major activity, though, that I want to talk about is the FOP ceremony that's always held at the base of the Capitol. That's where all of the survivors are there, and the FOP does a very moving ceremony last year. And at most years, the president is the keynote speaker. It's my understanding, although I'm not sure it's 100% confirmed, I believe the president, again, will be the keynote speaker. And all of the survivors then place a rose into a large wreath. That wreath is then transported to the memorial later that afternoon, again, at a very, very lovely service. And then an honor guard stands by that memorial for the next 72 hours.
Okay. You're listening to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm talking about National Police Week coming up next week, starting tomorrow, the National Law Enforcement Officers Memorial Fund. I'm talking with our guest, Herb Giobbe, Chief Operating Officer of the National Law Enforcement Officers Memorial Fund, and John Adler, President of the Federal Law Enforcement Officers Association. We'll be right back.
Hello, my federal friends. It's the Geico Gecko, and I've got good news for you. I might even say it's some of the best news ever. Okay, well, definitely in the top three. The big news. Geico now offers discounts for most federal employees GS7 or above, which is no doubt a lot of you out there. So you could be saving hundreds of dollars on your car insurance, all with a company that began over 70 years ago with the sole purpose of serving government employees like yourself. Yeah, that's right. Geico, the government employees insurance company. And today, well, we're the third largest car insurance company in the nation. And did you know about Geico's 97% customer satisfaction rate? Well, saving money tends to make people rather happy, I think. So congrats again to those federal employees GS7 or above. Welcome to the Savings Club. Mike?
Got it. Hey, folks, this is Mike Causey. The Gecko's right. Discounts are available for most federal employees GS7, the equivalent, or above. Just call Geico at 1-800-947-AUTO, go to geico.com, or visit your local Geico office to see how much you could save.
Welcome back to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Bill Bransford. I'm talking with Herb Giobbe and John Adler. We're talking about National Police Week 2011. If you have a question or a comment, please give us a call toll-free at 1-877-936-9333 or email us at fedtalk@federalnewsradio.com. So, Herb, you're Chief Operating Officer of the National Law Enforcement Officers Memorial Fund. How'd you get into that?
A very interesting story, Bill. And in fact, it's, an archetypical Washington story. I was Chief of Staff to several members on Capitol Hill, and I was fortunate enough to have the opportunity to come and work for the Law Enforcement Memorial. Our chairman and founder, Craig Floyd, contacted me literally a little over 6 years ago because they were in the process of designing and trying to get approvals for the new Law Enforcement Officers Museum, which is also going to go in Judiciary Square. And I had a background, in fact, I'm a lawyer by trade, and then a background working, of course, with the federal agencies and on Capitol Hill, and also a prior background working with U.S. Soccer, doing a very major project building our National Soccer Training Center out in Carson, California. So while I have no law enforcement background or no museum background, Craig offered me the wonderful opportunity to come and assist him with the major project of building the museum, especially getting it through all of the federal approval processes with Department of Interior, the Commission on Fine Arts, the National Capital Planning Commission. So I was brought in almost literally 6 years ago, and it's just been a fabulous time.
So now we're talking about the culmination of a lot of your efforts, yes. And we'll be talking about the museum a little bit later, yep, in the program, which is something I'm sure you're very involved in. Yep. And John, you're president of the Federal Law Enforcement Officers Association. Tell me a little bit about what that is. I think it's also known as FLEOA.
Yes. It's a nonpartisan, nonprofit professional association that exclusively represents active and retired federal law enforcement officers. Right now, we have approximately 26,000 members, and many of
them. It's a pretty good size organization.
Yes.
And you're not a labor union. You're a professional association.
We're professional. Although some of the functions or some of the services we provide are somewhat comparable to what some of the unions do
as far as representing members, yeah.
We like to consider ourselves the voice, the legislative voice of federal law enforcement. We sort of, tout ourselves as the largest stakeholder group to educate members of Congress on the issues that impact the federal law enforcement community. Our members come from over 65 different federal agencies. So we have members who come from the FBI, and we have members who come from the smallest inspector general. All members created equal, all valued members of FLIOA. And if anybody out there listening right now, if you're a federal law enforcement officer with investigative authorities and peace officer status, we encourage you to go to FLIOA.org, FLIOA.org, and learn more about us.
And Herb, I think you mentioned your website earlier, but you want to mention it again?
Yes, it's lawmemorial.org. Very easy to remember.
Lawmemorial.org.
Yes.
Okay. So, John, we heard Herb talking a lot about these activities next week. What does it mean for the federal agencies that celebrate National Police Week? Herb's focus is a little bit broader than just the federal community, but your focus is the federal community, and you're involved in Police Week as well.
Correct. You know, it's one big family, and what Herb hit on and what actually comes to play is law enforcement from local, state, federal, tribal, and even other components that somehow fit in between those categories. We all come together. We all experience the very emotional camaraderie of coming together to pay respects for those who died in the line of duty. 2010, we lost 10 federal law enforcement officers in the line of duty who made the ultimate sacrifice. You know, in my capacity as national president of FLIOA, I serve on the executive board of the National Law Enforcement Officers Memorial and work closely with other law enforcement organizations and Herb and the outstanding staff of the memorial. And, of course, the godfather of law enforcement himself, Craig Floyd. And we in addition to putting on these events, it is our responsibility to maintain the memorial wall, as well as what we'll talk about later, which is get the National Law Enforcement Museum erected and opened. But it's a collective effort. And, you know, it's what we've learned since 9/11, Bill, you know, the separation of federal, state, and local. We are that much stronger when we work together. And this is a really important time of the year where we do come together and recognize everybody who wears the shield as a brother and sister and the sacrifices they make. We need to pay our respects. And as you know, our mantra is for the memorial with, you know, respect, honor, and remember. And those are three very important words that we all embrace. And we'll be paying those respects on May on the 13th during the candlelight vigil.
All right. So Herb, a little bit ago, you said, I haven't even gotten to the major events yet. And then you talked about a few major events. Are there some that you didn't mention that you'd like to bring up now? Because I have like three pages of events. I don't know that we have time to go over them all.
We could go on and on, but I did want to mention one other. I think I touched on at least the two highlight events, of course, the candlelight vigil on May 13th and the FOP wreath and the FOP ceremony at the Capitol on May 15th. But I'd be remiss if I also didn't recognize some of the major activities that are held by or conducted by one of our board member organizations. It's called COPS, Concerns of Police Survivors. This is the organization that provides the services to the surviving families. They will be taking care of the survivors all during this week with seminars and all sorts of activities to help the survivors get through what is a very difficult time. It is something to see when the survivors, go to the wall and actually see their loved one's name actually engraved on that wall and often do an etching. It is a very emotional time for them. And COPS, which is the Concerns of Police Survivors, does a magnificent job in helping these survivors get through not only this week, but of course, they take care of them from the moment the officer is killed in the line of duty and follow them for years to come.
It sounds like a very worthwhile organization. Or is there a way people can support them if they wanted to?
Certainly. And I believe their website is COPS.org. Yeah, COPS.org. Yes. They're actually located out of Missouri, but in fact, they're one of our founding organizations for the Law Enforcement Memorial Fund. In fact, the Law Enforcement Memorial Fund, our board of directors is comprised of the 16 major law enforcement organizations in the country. Of course, one of the prime ones being FLIOA, but we represent federal, state, and local management and union, as well as all of the support groups.
And one of the key points that you were mentioning before we went on the air, Herb, is that your May 15th is by statute a day that law enforcement is recognized, and people may notice the flag at half staff, and if they do, it's because There's a law honoring police officers, fallen police officers.
Can it's you talk actually about that? A law that was passed back in the 60s and signed by, proudly signed by President Kennedy. And in fact, it's designate that on May 15th, the flags throughout the United States are to be lowered at half staff, very similar to Memorial Day for the veterans. And it's the only other day of the year that has been officially designated for the flags to be flown at half staff. So we try and get that word out and encourage people all over the country to show their respect and honor for law enforcement and fly their flags at half staff on May 15th, which is Sunday this year.
Okay, we have a few minutes for any more of the significant events on Police Week, if you wanted to talk about them or...
I think we've hit on many of the there are runs, there are competitions, but again, as John said, this is a time when the whole community comes together and really embraces each other, kind of gives each other a big hug and helps the survivors. And the survivors not only being the families, as John can more aptly talk about, you know, really the surviving officers, you know, when a partner is killed or whatever, it has just as much effect on them as it might have on a husband or a wife or a child. So it's a time for everybody to come together and embrace and show respect to those that have fallen.
And the most visible ones, the ones that people may see and remember next week the most, the motorcycle, the police unit tour arriving,
the bike ride, the candlelight vigil on May 13th, that's in the evening at 8 o'clock, and the on Sunday, May 15th, the service at the Capitol, which starts at 11 a.m., and as I say, I believe the president will be the keynote speaker there.
Okay, well, that hopefully he will, and obviously if that happens, it's likely to get much more publicity. Can you tell me a little bit, Herb, the kind of the central focus, the reason why you think all of this happens and why it gets bigger every year?
Well, I think there's a recognition of the important role that law enforcement plays in our society, or I'd like to think that, and I'd like to think that our society is recognizing that role and how important it is. You know, it really literally goes all the way back to Thomas Jefferson, who talked about the key role that law enforcement would play in a democracy. And I think it's a way that, and again, all the kudos to, to our founder, Craig Floyd, and to many members of our board who 20 plus years ago thought, hey, number one, we needed a national memorial to honor these officers. That legislation, interestingly, was just passed in 1987, and the memorial was actually dedicated in 1991. So it's only 20 years old, kind of young for memorials in this town. But it's these folks came up with an idea of a way to honor law enforcement. And I think, and I'd like to hope that it's a way to bring the communities closer to law enforcement and understand what they're doing and the role they're playing.
And how important is it to honor and take care of the survivors, the people that are left behind?
It's really important, and I gave kudos earlier to cops, but I think it's important for all of us to recognize them as we do our military survivors. I believe they pay a higher price than even the law enforcement officers. For me, not even being involved in law enforcement, I'll tell you how it struck me, Bill, to be at the candlelight vigil or to be at other ceremonies and, you know, see the wife and see the young children and what effect it has on them. And I'll tell you, one of the things, by the way, I did fail to mention, although it's not an event, I would welcome all of your listeners, if they have a chance, to come to Judiciary Square at any point during the week and walk along the walls of the memorial. These survivors, some law enforcement, some wives and husbands and often children, leave the most touching mementos at the wall. You will see everything from a shot glass to, you know, the law enforcement partner, and, you know, an empty one and a full one and a bottle, you know, having the last drink, to notes from the children that will just tear your heart apart. You know, it is really moving to see these things. We, by the way, just like the Vietnam Memorial has done, we collect these every year, and they will be displayed on a rotating basis in our eventually in our museum.
And this happens especially this week,
there are a few things that are left during the year, but almost exclusively this week. In fact, the wall will literally be filled with all of these mementos, literally down to we have a collection. You're gonna chuckle at this. We have a collection of car doors. We have officers from...
Car door. Why car doors?
Police car doors. They will bring the door of the vehicle of that officer that was his vehicle, and they will leave it at the memorial with notes from their fellow officers and leave it there as a tribute. Literally, the car door. They will fly in the car door down to baseball bats if the officer played softball for the police team or something. Anything you can imagine, they leave. Guitars, whatever really was symbolic of that officer. And it's just touching and moving to go down the wall and see all these mementos. And that, to me, tells me what's going on in the survivors' minds and hearts.
So, and once again, back to Police Week, all of this long list of activities, yeah. Somebody wants to read through this list and figure out where they'd like to go, when they'd like to visit, where can they get that list?
It's all on our website, lawmemorial.org.
Lawmemorial.org.
Yes.
We're talking with Herb Giobbe and John Adler. We're talking about Police Week 2011. We'll be right back after this word from our sponsor. This is Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Hey, it's the Geico Gecko. Now, as a federal employee, you're probably one for a smart presentation, so I've put together some charts and graphs here. There you go. That will help illustrate the money you could save by switching to Geico. First thing you'll notice is that Geico now offers discounts to most federal employees GS7 or above. Now, this is big news. But that shouldn't come as any surprise from a car insurance company that has been serving government employees since 1936. And as you can see on this graph here, it's probably why we're the third largest car insurance company in the nation. Yeah, no, I do actually realise you can't see these, but trust me, they're rather impressive. Especially the 97% customer satisfaction rate. And when you consider it only takes 15 minutes to see if you could save 15% or more, well, all you GS7 employees or above should just contact Geico. Tell them, Mike.
Hey folks, this is Mike Causey, and the Gecko said it best. Most federal employees GS7, the equivalent or above, could get a discount on their car insurance. Just call Geico at 1-800-947-AUTO, go to geico.com, or visit your local Geico office to see how much you could save.
I'm Deborah Roth, host of Fed Talk, and partner at the law firm of Shaw, Bransford & Roth. Our firm specializes in helping federal employees with legal issues concerning their jobs or benefits. For two decades, we have been representing federal employees in adverse action cases, employment discrimination complaints, inspector general and internal affairs investigations, security clearance issues, and other federal employment disputes. If you have a legal concern, don't wait. Call Shaw, Bransford & Roth at 202-463-8400 or visit our website at shawbransford.com.
Welcome back to Fed Talk. I'm Bill Bransford, and we're in the studio with Herb Giobbe and John Adler. We're talking about Police Week 2011. Our phone number, if you'd like to talk to us, is 1-877-936-9333. That's a toll-free number. Or you can email us at fedtalk@federalnewsradio.com. So, John, tell me a little bit about some of the trends as far as being a law enforcement officer has its risks. And yep. What are some of those trends that you see going on?
Well, one of the unfortunate trends that seems to have emerged this year is a growing population of irrational, dangerous criminals who will not respond to lawful verbal commands, will not respond to a law enforcement officer's presence, and in fact, they will resist arrest. And not only will they resist arrest, they'll shoot. And so we're dealing with this growing population of extremely violent criminals. And I've been asked by news reporters many times over, what happened? Why is this happening? And, I'm as good as anyone else with my theories, but some of the things I think contributing to the increase in violent criminals is drug abuse and people who are substance abusers. When your starting point is you have a criminal mind and you add to that a substance abuse situation, you're going to become increasingly dangerous and less likely to respond to a law enforcement officer's commands. So that, we're still wrestling with issues with immigration and how that factors in is when somebody sort of becomes this irrational opportunist, it means they have no reason, no reason to comply, no compunction to comply, because they feel everything will be lost. So hence, we're dealing with this criminal element. We're also very aggressively involved in joint task forces. And, you know, in looking upon the Marshal Service, for instance, they've done phenomenal work taking the worst of the worst off the streets. But unfortunately, what goes hand in hand with that is the risk of encountering these irrational, dangerous criminals who will shoot and not respond.
They're sometimes the first ones to meet them.
That's correct.
As they serve warrants, as they try to bring people into court.
The Marshal Service, they have the best of the best leading the fugitive task force, and they are taking the most violent, despicable people off the streets. But in the process, and we saw this year already, we had two of our deputies killed and another one shot, and task force officers killed as well.
And those marshals, they will be honored at the during Police Week?
In this case, John Perry and Derek Hotsonsville will be honored next year. So it would be 2012, May 13th. Their names will be read along with all the other law enforcement officers who make the ultimate sacrifice, and we will be honoring their memory in 2012. This year on May 13th, we'll be honoring and recognizing all of the law enforcement officers by way of research and or who died in the line of duty in 2010.
And Herb, I know this is something that the National Law Enforcement Officers Memorial Fund watches on a daily basis.
We do. Bill, we actually are the premier research entity of all of the law enforcement fatalities since the inception of law enforcement. We have all of the records of all of the officers who have died in the line of duty. We keep records of how they die. These are becoming very useful statistics, especially with the current law enforcement fatalities, to try and see what sort of trends there are and see, again, one of our other missions is to promote safety and, of course, to see if we can reduce the number of law enforcement fatalities. So we look at these statistics and try and find what sort of trends. As John was mentioning, again, one of the disturbing things we saw in 2010 were the multiple officer shootings, or sometimes referred as cluster killings. There were literally five multiple officer shootings in our country, resulting in 10 officer deaths. Very, very disturbing. And again, the trends this year with the felonious shootings are way up. It's a very disturbing trend. We work with the Department of Justice to make sure they know these type of trends and to see what can be done about them. I want to underline or overlay something John said and kind of implied. I think what we're doing with law enforcement is we're asking them to do so much more with less. It's no longer just the officer on the beat, who, of course,
has to... For law enforcement, too, just like other federal employees?
For all of law enforcement, federal and federal, state, and local. You know, they obviously have to now worry about homeland security. They have to worry about normal crime. As John said, we now have to worry about these hardened criminals seem to have no respect for human life, sadly, as a result of what's happening in many state and federal budgets, we're seeing some cutbacks. So we're asking all of these men and women out there who put their lives on the line every day to do so much more with less. And it's not just less officers on the beat. It's less money for training. It's less equipment. It's less sophisticated crime-solving equipment, and it's a great concern to us.
I know one of the things, Herb, that that your organization has done is to help make it more safe for police officers to drive their vehicles, because vehicular accidents are a major reason why police officers die.
Exactly. John was saying earlier how up until last year, traffic fatalities or traffic-related type of accidents were the number one cause of law enforcement fatalities. And you can appreciate, if you think about this, number one, the officers are out in their vehicles, almost constantly. Number two, just think of any major highway around here, 395 or 95, an officer pulls someone over, even for a normal traffic stop that they're speeding, and there are people going 65, 70 miles an hour past them, and sadly, there are way too many people who don't pay attention and plow into these parked vehicles. So we've seen a number of these type of deaths increase over the years. We as an organization have tried very hard to work with communities for things like move over laws, to disseminate information, to working with one of our board groups, the IACP and FLIOA, to make sure that officers
are— What does IACP stand for?
The International Associations of Chiefs of Police. They're actually located right out of Alexandria. To make sure officers are appropriately trained on how to handle these traffic stops. Interestingly, you're going to find this very interesting. We encourage officers, and I know there's now a very major program with the Department of Justice, to wear vests. Well, that's not only good for shootings. Our statistics have shown, interestingly, and this is how we use our statistics, that those officers who are in a traffic accident who are wearing their vest are far less likely to be killed, because the vest actually protects the major body functions in the crash. So we try and do all sorts of activities like that to, again, try and eliminate as much as possible fatalities and traffic-related accidents.
So John, as we talk about this increase in the in police officers dying in the line of duty in the last, year and a half, because 2009 was a relatively low year for— there were still unfortunately some who died. But what about in the federal community, the federal law enforcement community?
Yeah, 2010. Although if we lose one officer, it's a bad year for us. But 2010 was exceptionally bad for us. We lost 11 federal law enforcement officers. This year, we've already lost 6. As you know, both Herb and I hit on before, the trends are quite disturbing. One officer dies, it's a blow to the entire law enforcement community. And it's a mixture. You know, what Herb was talking about in terms of the traffic incidents, this year we have 33 fatalities so far by virtue of gunfire, which was up 65% from last year. And that's a tremendous concern. But as Herb pointed out, you know, we work closely with the Department of Justice and other partners to do everything we can to make sure that law enforcement is empowered and as educated and protected as we can be out there. And as Herb pointed out, and I appreciate it because I'm an active law enforcement officer, I greatly appreciate what Herb said. We are trying to make do with less. And, you know, unfortunately, certain members of Congress may choose to treat us like a bloated miscellaneous expense in the budget. But when you cut away funding from law enforcement, you begin to break down the foundation of law and order. And when that happens, people get hurt. And unfortunately, we get killed as well. And as Herb said, it impacts training. Yes. And unfortunately, you can't get by on the cheap in law enforcement. You do it right, or unfortunately, we die. But, you know, we're not going to stop. We have absolutely no decrease in our motivation. You know, we're motivated by honor. You know, it goes hand in hand with the mantra of the memorial. And we're going to continue to do everything we can because it's our honor to serve, irrespective of the unfortunate situation with Congress and the budget.
So, John, besides the doing more with less and losing some of the funding, can you talk about some of the other issues, major issues facing federal law enforcement today?
Well, you know, one of the concerns, and this doesn't go by way of budget, it's maybe just sort of a conceptual point or point of debate or discussion, is the provisions of the Patriot Act. A very big concern of ours is whether or not this particular act or the provisions will be renewed. But what we're looking for is really a long-term solution. And what we see is this sort of game of kick the can where, you know, there's a stay of execution. The provisions are renewed for, you know, a very relatively short period of time. And it's somewhat confusing to us because, you know, the people we're pursuing, the suspected terrorists we're pursuing, their conduct, their behavior never goes on pause. So we're sort of in this situation where we have the authority, then we don't. We have the authority, and we don't. In order for us to effectively sustain our efforts to pursue and capture the worst of the worst who are trying to cause harm to our homeland and our citizenry, we need the long-term authority to do that. So we're trying to work and educate members of Congress to encourage them to renew the provisions of the expiring Patriot Act for a long-term basis and not take away or dilute any of these provisions. It's a very significant point for the law enforcement community, federal, state, and local.
Are there any other issues that you're working on, John?
Oh, well, hell, I think we need a longer segment, Bill, to talk about all the issues we're working on. As you and I speak, my BlackBerry just landed about 5 new issues. But certainly, yeah, we're working on a lot of different issues. You know, another one is the Good Samaritan Act. One of the things we'd like to have happen is have legislation introduced to provide criminal liability coverage in a situation where federal law enforcement officer or a law enforcement officer is involved in the shooting. But as it applies to a federal law enforcement officer, if they're involved in the shooting and it's within the scope of their employment, you know, we maintain that they should, the supremacy clause should apply. It should be brought before a federal venue rather than see a federal law enforcement officer unfortunately or wrongfully prosecuted, as we saw in the case of Will Clark in the Virgin Islands. And, you know, thank God Will Clark was exonerated, but he should not have had to gone through that miserable process. So we're hoping to get something done to correct that.
And I know that was a major effort on your behalf. Herb, tell us a little bit about some of the other things the Law Enforcement Officers Memorial Fund does.
Bill, I'd be pleased to do that. In fact, the major project we're working on now is to build the National Law Enforcement Museum. The memorial came about as a result of an act of Congress in 1987, and then again, thanks to our board of directors with organizations like John and Flioa, they went back to Congress in 2000 and said, you know, we're doing a great job with this memorial, having wonderful events, honoring law enforcement. But we need to tell the stories behind the names of now those 19,000 officers who are on that wall. And what about all of those 900,000 officers who are out in the street every day? How do we tell their stories? How do we tell the public what they do? How do we bring the communities and law enforcement together? So Congress passed a piece of legislation in 2000 and authorized us to build the National Law Enforcement Museum, literally next to the memorial.
Right there at Judiciary Square.
Right in Judiciary Square. It will be an underground museum, literally abutting the memorial.
Let's hear a little bit more about that museum after this short break. You're listening to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
It's the Geico Gecko with a little hello to all you federal employees. Now, in government, there are people on all points of the political spectrum. But there is one thing that everyone agrees on. Saving money is good. Which brings me to the big news. GEICO now offers discounts to most federal employees GS7 or above. It don't matter if you're a Democrat or an aristocrat, left wing, right wing or a chicken wing. If you're a federal employee GS7 or above, you could be saving a lot of money on your car insurance by switching to GEICO. So no matter if you're blue or red or in my case green. If you're a federal employee GS7 or above, contact GEICO and see how much you could save. Isn't that right, Mike?
Exactly right, my little green friend. Hey, folks, this is Mike Causey. And like the Gecko said, discounts are available for most federal employees, GS7, the equivalent, or above. Just call GEICO at 1-800-947-AUTO, go to geico.com, or visit your local GEICO office to see how much you could save.
Welcome back to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. This is the last part of our show. We're going to finish up talking about National Police Week by talking about the very exciting National Law Enforcement Officers Museum that Herb was talking about before the break. If you have a question you'd like to talk to us, our toll-free number is 1-877-936-9333, or you can email us your questions at fedtalk@federalnewsradio.com. So, Herb, I've heard about your museum before, and I think the times I've heard about it before, it was still just on the planning table, but you're actually working on it now.
Bill, I'm pleased to report that we actually had a ceremonial groundbreaking on October 14th, but much more importantly, on January 3rd, we started the real construction for the museum. It is about a 3-year construction period because it's all underground. It's a very complicated construction. Congress asked us to build it all underground, and for a good reason. And that is, you know, for those of our listeners who have been down to Judiciary Square, or hopefully will get to Judiciary Square, it's an absolute magnificent oasis in the middle of town. It's a little over 3.5 acres. It's just a really beautiful part of town and really an open area. And back in 2000, Congress said, it would be a shame to put up another building. So they asked us if we would do an underground building. Obviously, it will have entry pavilions, two beautiful glass entry pavilions where people will be able to go down into the museum. It will be 55,000 square feet. And what we're going to try and do is tell the stories behind the names of those officers who died in the line of duty, but also have the public understand what a law enforcement officer does each and every day. Really kind of walk in their shoes. Some of the great, you know, it's going to be a very interactive museum. I, not being a museum person, and may offend some of your listeners, it's not going to be a lot of that stuff under glass. It's going to be very hands-on. For example, in the one area where we call Take the Case, you will literally go in and look at you'll be able to choose from a couple crime scenes and actually try and solve a case. You will actually go through the training an officer might have. For example, you will actually be able to participate or use what we call the judgment simulator, the shoot, don't shoot simulator.
So people will have
yes.
Like weapons. They'll be able, I assume, kind of electronic, like a video game.
It's actually much more than the video game. It is actually the piece of equipment that law enforcement uses in their actual training. So it's not even a replica. It's the actual piece of equipment that law enforcement uses. And quite frankly, I know I've tried it. And it's really kind of an iconic piece in the museum in this sense. I think a lot of people will come into the museum because they'll hear it's cool to do that shoot, don't shoot simulator, and they'll be drawn to that. When they actually try the simulator, they will have much greater respect for law enforcement and what it's like to make those split-second decisions. And again, I can say this probably much easier than John, who really lives this each and every day. Not coming from law enforcement, you really don't have an appreciation of what it's like. And I've only done a simulator. You know, you do that simulator, and I'm going to tell you, you'll be sweating. You'll end up half the time not doing the right thing. And you'll come away. We're not looking for people to come away and wear a badge that says, I love cops, you know. But what we want to do is educate people that when they come out of that museum, they'll say, oh, I have a much better appreciation for what a law enforcement officer does, how tough it is out there on the street. When they read about, you know, a shooting, they'll think, boy, you know, it's tough making those split-second decisions. For example, I was talking about the Take the Case section. We'll have a whole forensics lab. Well, you're literally, you know, just like CSI on TV, you'll literally be able to go in and solve a crime. We'll have a great section where we'll look at how law enforcement was treated in the movies and on television. We'll have a 911 call center where you'll literally be able to put on earphones and take what were real calls and make the appropriate dispatches and see how you did. One of the iconic artifacts, though, that we have, which will be very interesting. In fact, you'll see it right as you come in the door, and something that I know is very close to the people in Washington. The Department of Interior has agreed to give us Eagle One. That's the helicopter that was used in the Air Florida crash river.
Okay.
That will literally be hanging from the ceiling as you walk into the museum. And we'll, of course, tell stories about that. So very hands-on, very exciting. We have agreements with all of the federal agencies, which is, I think, going to be very unique to many of the museums. All of the federal agencies, from the FBI to the Secret Service to the IRS, they have agreed to lend us whatever artifacts we need. For them, they're not artifacts. For them, they're pieces of their cases. You know, they're evidence. They're in their evidence lockers. So think of any famous case. We will have the availability to have those type of artifacts displayed in our museum. So I think it's going to be quite exciting.
So you're hoping to open within 3 years?
We hope to have a soft opening in the end of 2013 and a grand opening in the early 2014.
And you're building this museum without federal money?
That is correct.
Even though Congress authorized you to build it, they're not giving you money.
Exactly. Congress set up the same deal they set up with the memorial. They said, we will let you use this beautiful piece of land in Judiciary Square, just like they did with the memorial. They said, you may utilize that land. And actually, the memorial is actually a National Park Service site. But they said for the museum, you may use this land, but you must build the museum all with private funds. So we were raising all of the funds privately to build the museum. It is an $80 million capital campaign. We have already raised about $42 plus million.
And you're still working on it.
And we're still working on it. So, and the D.C. government has been very cooperative. They have given us the authorization to issue municipal bonds, as well as given pass some tax credit legislation. They have been a wonderful partner in helping build this museum.
And you're optimistic that by the time 3 years passes, the other $38 million will be there?
We are very optimistic, especially with the economy turning around. We're seeing that in our fundraising also.
So as you build this museum and you anticipate operating it, you're going to have a staff, you're going to have to keep it going. Yeah. I'm sure there's some costs associated with that.
We anticipate, we've of course done all of our business plans in leading up to constructing the museum, not only designing the museum itself, but of course looking at it as to how it would operate. We will need a staff of about 75 to 80 people, and of course we will receive no federal funding to operate it. So we do anticipate there will be an entry fee. Right now we anticipate trying to keep it relatively low, especially compared to other museums that are charging a fee. The entry fee will probably be $10, and of course we'll be giving discounts to students and law enforcement officials and people
and
like
that. That's a bit lower than the Crime and Punishment Museum, the Spy Museum, and the Newseum, which are located in your neighborhood.
Correct.
You can't compete with the Smithsonian, but you can compete with those other fairly popular museums.
We'd like to keep it in the range, at least where movies are today. So if a family were thinking of taking their kids to the movies, they might think of taking their kids to the law enforcement museum.
And of course, if they do take their kids to the law enforcement museum, I think that's going to be a tremendous opportunity to get kids excited about a career in law enforcement.
Yes.
Do you see that?
We certainly hope that will be one of the offshoots of having the museum. But the most important thing we'd like to do for anybody who comes in that museum, and again, we're going to have a wonderful national education program that will be preparing curriculum for middle school students all across the country. But we'd like to bring the community closer to law enforcement, have the community work a little more hand in glove with law enforcement, and again, have the community understand the role of law enforcement in our democratic society. We refer to them as the thin blue line, and they are. They're that presence that are out there that keep our citizens safe each and every day. And not that, again, that we're looking to, you know, just be a rah-rah place for law enforcement, but just have an appreciation of what law enforcement does to really bring about our democratic society.
And John, as a member of the National Law Enforcement Officers Memorial Fund Board of Directors, you're very involved in this building of the museum?
Absolutely. In fact, I serve on the Museum Advisory Council as well.
And have you made sure there's a role or place there in that museum for federal law enforcement?
Oh, I don't have to. Herb, if it wasn't clear from listening to him speak, Herb and his staff have a phenomenal handle on this. It's going to be a diversified museum. And if I may also add one other particular artifact, in light of the 10-year anniversary of the 9/11 attacks, one of our ambassadors, Bren Clark, and others are bringing in a piece from 9/11 as another very interesting, very important artifact to incorporate into our museum. And it's just.
What is? Can you tell what that piece is, or is it?
It's actually a piece of the towers.
Of the Twin Towers.
Correct.
Okay.
So yeah, no, we're thrilled. You know, it's a lot of work, but with determination. I mean, we won't stop. Of course, we're going to appeal to corporate friends and individuals to help us make this happen. But as our mantra goes with the museum, it's a matter of honor, and we won't stop until that museum is built.
Okay. In fact, one last thing, it made me remember one of the events I forgot to mention was the inaugural 9/11 Blue Valor Run, and that's on May 12th. We will have over 100 motorcyclists that will, and this is different from the law ride, 100 motorcyclists that will ride their motorcycles on the 12th from Ground Zero to the memorial in honor of the fallen officers from 9/11.
All right. We only have about 30 seconds left. I thought, Herb, it might be a good chance for you just to reiterate how people can find out about Police Week 2011.
Yes. Please go to our website, which is lawmemorial.org. We would certainly welcome everyone to join us on May 13th at 8 p.m. It's a just stirring candlelight vigil. And if you can't, go to our website and you can even see a streaming webcast of that event.
And John, one last chance for FLIOA's website for anybody that's interested in joining.
to WFLEOA, that's FLEOA.org.
Many thanks to Herb Giobi and John Adler for being our guests on Fed Talk. That's all the time we have for our show. Thank you for joining us. Fed Talk is brought to you by the attorneys of Shaw, Bransford, and Roth. Have a great weekend.